Okay, we're recording. We're recording. We're live. Whenever you're ready.
Filmmakers and photographers drinking coffee and talking shit.
Welcome to Filmmakers and Photographers Drinking Coffee and Talking Shit. This is episode number 3. In this podcast, you'll hear insights and stories from four guys and maybe an occasional guest who have all come to the craft of visual media from very different starting points. I'm Matt Rickman.
I am Sean Letty.
I am Randy Fitzenmeyer.
And I am Chris Bell.
Chris, tell me, what are you passionate about? What's your passion projects?
What's my passion project? Well, I have a very interesting project I've been working on for years. Out in the middle of nowhere, Utah. The challenging thing about this project is my subjects are static, unmoving. You might say they're locked in the rocks. Because I'm doing a project on rock art. And this is a very unusual type of rock art. It's called Barrier Canyon style. It's very old. Some think that it could be as old as 5,000 to 6,000 years. The artwork is exquisite, and it's in very remote places, probably places that to the archaic people, which is what they're called, these were holy sites. They probably only went there to conduct some type of ceremony, something like that. And the artwork is unique, to say the least. It could be even referred to as disturbing. You've seen some of this,
yeah.
Matt.
Yeah, it's cool stuff.
Yeah, we hauled in to what was called Perfect Panel and almost didn't find it. And just by the luck of the draw, happened to see a trail out on a mesa with probably, I don't know, what was the drop off there? Maybe 500 feet?
Yeah,
if you would
definitely
step back about 10 or 12 spaces or so. But yeah, so I've been working on this for years. So the challenging thing is, you know, you don't want to just like hook a camera up and, you know, point it over to rock art. There's nothing going on there. So what I've been doing is doing nighttime time lapse. So I put it on a rail system, slowly move the camera. We got the moving stars, set some interesting lighting up, and kind of capture what I'm trying to capture is this unworldly experience that would support the rock art itself. And so it's a passion project that will eventually see the light of day.
What do you hope to show at the end of all this? What's your hopes?
The hopes are is to bring this really unique art form that only a very small number of people have ever probably seen or experienced, but bring it to them in a unique way so that they can experience them themselves.
So are you going to put a little mini film short together and then maybe publicly show it? Or
yeah, there'll be interviews with, there's a very small group that have dedicated a lot of time to understanding the rock art, not only like why this spot, and oftentimes it has to deal with acoustics, but also what do they mean? You know, is it we'll never really know because we can't talk to these people because they've been gone for, you know, thousands of years. But they left this legacy of incredible art. And so it's just it's kind of a kick-ass project because you just, you know, when you set out to go discover one of these sites, you got about a 50-50 chance of finding it. Unless you've got GPS coordinates, which I do have a whole library of those sites, but anyway, coming attractions, I'll share some time lapse of some of the stuff I've captured, and you guys can judge if it's surreal or not.
And we definitely will.
I'm counting
judge.
On it. Good.
Any target dates on when you want to?
Yeah, let's nail this guy down on a deadline.
Yeah see, you can't do that on a passion
and
project.
Photographers need deadlines, and
I had to throw that out there.
Yeah, let's next week I'll have it all wrapped up, and we can go to the screening and
next. You said that 2 weeks ago.
Well, it's a passion project.
I'm just giving you shit.
Hey, at least you have one.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Randy, what's your passion? What's your passion projects?
I really don't have anything going as of late, except for a music video that I've been kind of passionate about, and it's for a local artist here in Fort Collins by the name of Carrie Morin. Incredibly talented guy, and we're doing kind of an old western themed music video, and it's been a lot of fun. Challenging logistics-wise, but I think I'll start throwing some sneak peeks out on some screenshots on Instagram soon, and see if we can get some interest drummed up. But it's been a lot of fun.
But he's a very recognized performer. Right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. He just went on a European tour last week.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah, kind of bluesy folk.
Nice. Nice, cool.
Why the western thing?
Well, he's a Native American, and okay. He's kind of had this story in mind that he wanted to go down that lane with dog soldiers and all kinds of cool things. So he wrote it, and we just went with it. And
cool.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty neat.
Nice. Yeah. So when is that going to be done?
That. To be determined. Well, let's see. We're hoping to have it done by the end of October, so provided everything goes well.
Yeah. Are you guys done shooting?
No.
No.
We got all his parts done, not in chronological order, before he went on his European tour.
Yeah.
So now we're just trying to fill in all the blanks and get it in the editing room, so...
Nice.
Hopefully there's still some leaves on the trees where we had shot for right. Continuity a week ago.
Fix so it in post.
Did you fix that in post?
We'll see. Love that term.
Sean, how about you, man? What do you do on the side?
Man.
What fuels your passion?
Yeah, you know, I'm the youngest one at the table, so you'd think that...
He has to mention that every damn time.
Yeah, I know.
The most
yes.
passion. No, I have a lot of... projects that I dabble in outside of work. So one of them obviously is my coffee hobby. So, you know, I'm like an at-home barista hobbyist. You know, I have a legit espresso machine. I buy locally roasted coffee and try and find flavors that I like. And then latte art, because, you know, as a photographer or a filmmaker, you're also an artist, right? And so for me, everything kind of turns into art, you know, like mowing stripes in your lawn that are perfectly straight and alternating can be a way of, you know, turning mowing your lawn into an art project, right? So the same thing goes for coffee for me. Follow me at rituale.cafe on Instagram. But no, that's one of my passion projects is trying to get as good as I can at latte art. It's because I love coffee. And then I do a lot of freelance work on the side as well, you know, moonlighting and stuff, photography, videos, graphic design, you know, whatever it ends up being. I also stay, you know, pretty passionate by just having my outside work projects. You know, it's always something new, and it keeps me on my toes, right? I might be doing photography one day, a video the next, a logo the next, you know. So those are things that really keep me. And then, of course, music. That would be my third one to list off. Love music, love playing music. I haven't been writing as much music as I want to, you know, because I have two kids now. And shout out, I think they're probably watching live. Hi, Oliver. Hi, Lucas. Hi, Christy. But yeah, you know, I think music is also a really big passion of mine. Listening to it, playing it, and writing it when I get the chance. So, those are my passion projects.
Yeah, you wrote the jingle to this song recently. I mean, that's a big deal.
To the podcast, yeah. I did. That's something that you know, when we started the podcast, that was put to me as my challenge was to write the theme song. And you know, whereas like folk singer songwriter music is cool, I'm a metal guy. I like metal, and I didn't think metal would fit for the coffee house vibe. So,
there's a metal version in there somewhere.
I think we should try it. So, yeah. Sean, when are you going to have that ready?
Let's say next week or next month we do the next setup.
You'll have a metal version.
Let's do it.
You'll bring your little speaker in with the grunge speaker.
Well, maybe
I'll dial in some drums in Ableton. Bring that with us as well. We'll live stream.
Maybe we can hold one of these at your coffee shop at your place, and then you can have a metal theme
there
ready for that specific episode.
We'll do a location specific intro.
Yeah.
So Matt, what about you? What are your passion projects?
I have a few. I seem to never have a shortage of ideas and ways to spend my time. the first one probably, I mean, the obvious one is this podcast, you know. I brought you guys all together and started this podcast as a way to explore podcasting and more than anything, just an excuse to hang out with friends once a month and drink some coffee.
Or kombucha.
the other thing, probably my biggest thing is like travel filmmaking. My wife and I are planning on taking a trip around the world in about 5 years. And we plan on documenting it, making some films and some content out of it. And so I'm kind of practicing that leading up to that. I've done a few trips, try to do a couple trips every year. And so, you know, documenting those trips and trying to put together a story and figuring out some of those sort of things is one of my passion projects. They're all sitting in the can. Some of them have started being edited. I have more projects to edit than I can shake a stick at. Another one I've got is I'm getting ready to start restoring a 1971 Volkswagen Beetle that my mom and dad bought me when I was 15. I plan on doing a vlog on that and kind of document my process. That's going to be mattswayinoverhishead.com. And then lastly, I'm really into like hand lettering and stuff, and I'm not good at it at all. So I decided since I'm not very good at it, what would be the best way for me to do that? And so I bought these big fat Sharpie oil markers, and I decided to start with hand lettering giant letters all over the walls in my house. So, you know, some people start with little notebooks. I start on walls. So that's another passion project that I have going on. So
hand lettering, what is that?
Hand lettering, just basically, you know, the idea of like lettering, you know, making words and letters and stuff. And some people do like, you know, kind of calligraphy mm-hmm. Type letters or big blocky letters or, yeah. You know, that kind of thing. There's a few artists that, you know, I've kind of been turned on to that do this sort of thing, like Timothy Goodman in New York. And I just think it's really cool. And it's, for me, what's really cool about doing it on the wall is that Sharpie makes these fantastic oil-based Sharpies that can write on anything. And they mm-hmm. are fantastic.
And they're permanent, cheap. I would assume.
It's just like oil paint. So, yeah. You know, you could paint over them. But, yeah, it's there. It's paint right. For sure. So.
So it sounds like there could be some graffiti in your future.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
Got to get you teamed up with a couple of train cars.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing. I see these train cars, and I'm like...
Bridge overpasses?
Wow, this stuff's amazing. The artwork. Yeah. I mean, outside the building here, we're at Dark Heart in Loveland, Colorado. There's a fantastic giant, like, octopus mural on the side of the building. And I just love it. You know, I just love big, fat artwork like that.
Well, you know? I think you should do it on the... on your Beetle and then clear coat over it.
That'd be cool. There's an idea.
Wow. I don't know if I'd have the guts to do that.
I might have to join you in my little, I do have a little, since it's not passion projects on photography only, I have a 1947 Willys and maybe we should alternate.
Yeah.
Go back and forth.
Absolutely.
Restore
Willys.
That. Yeah.
Filmmakers and photographers restoring cars and talking shit. maybe we got a side project to split off.
Every time that fist goes into the sidewall after a wrench slips, you'll be talking shit, all right.
Exactly. Let's talk about some cool shit that we've seen. I'll start real quick here. Mine's pretty simple. So GoPro released the new GoPro Hero 7 last week, and
we got to use that on the Vestas project.
The 7?
Yeah. Or is it the 7? Is that
it? It just came out.
Oh, maybe it isn't the 7 then.
Yeah.
6.
The 7. So, like, I've got the 6, and it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I think, like, the 6 that I have, the stabilization in 4K 30 mm-hmm. works pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. But their big thing with the 7 is that it you don't need a gimbal. You know, and from what I've seen...
Yet to be seen. We'll see.
So, right? I've seen some samples from it, and it looks pretty good, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, for a GoPro, I'm sure it's probably a pretty good improvement, you know. Everybody that I've seen online is raving about the thing. They think it's great, and, mm-hmm. you know, but...
I wished I would have had it on my trip I just got back from.
I know.
This morning.
I know. Where'd you get back from, Randy?
What's that?
Where did you just come back from?
I just came back from Hawaii.
That must be rough.
Beautiful place to shoot.
Somebody's got to do it. So for all my pool shots of the kiddo, it would have been great to have the new GoPro 7 with built-in...
Stabilization,
yeah. And no need for a gimbal, and especially, you know, underwater.
Right.
We were talking about it's not like physical stabilization. It's software based, right?
I think so. I don't know if on that one if they've got if they're mixing like some physical mechanical stabilization.
Probably on the chip level,
image.
I would.
But I think it's all software.
That's crazy.
Based actually.
That's awesome.
Which other manufacturers are doing as well?
Yeah, but they've definitely from what their claims are. I mean, they showed some footage of a guy on a mountain bike trail just, you know, helling it down a thing. And, man, that footage was just silky.
Wow. You know,
that's crazy. They
need to do something because they were having a difficult time for a little while with a lot of competition coming out.
Well, that would give
out.
Birth to one of my drones, the drone that I crashed when you were with me.
Yeah, right?
Because it's got a gimbal on it and everything. But,
yeah.
You know, GoPro, putting a GoPro on there, it's still too much.
Still a little shake. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
that'd be perfect.
That. Cool.
So last time we talked, Chris, you talked about using the Pulse from Alpine Labs. You were getting ready to go out and do a time lapse. How did that turn out?
It didn't turn out at all. I was so much looking forward to trying that out. Yeah, it. They said it shipped, and all that UPS knows is it was immediately returned to sender. And I was like, why would you return it? You know,
that's
it's
bizarre.
So I have no idea what happened, but unfortunately, we didn't have the device, but. You know, the project, it turned out really well. We weren't in too much of extreme time of day. Either the light was blasting right into the lens, or it was, because Randy, I sent him out there for 4 days as well.
Yeah.
Because we had to go to Baltimore. Didn't have to go. We wanted to go to Baltimore. Yeah, I got a cool-ass project, or kind of geeky, totally geeky stuff that is super cool. One of our clients wanted to do something unusual, and I wish I would have come up with this idea, but they're the one that voiced it. They said, what about like ViewMaster slides?
Yeah.
You know, the old ViewMaster. Uh-huh. So we made 3D ViewMaster slides, and it is the coolest thing.
Right on.
Yeah. So you look in there, and it's amazing 3D.
Did a little research on how to accomplish that?
Yeah, how does that work?
I don't know. You'd have to ask Matt Fay.
Okay.
He was the contractor I brought in on the project.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the one that wanted to go 3D. He was like going, when you were doing ViewMaster slides, he said, well, we got two eyes. We got stereo, you know, stereo vision here. Why don't we go 3D? And the client was like going, I don't know about that. That's, you know, what if it doesn't turn out? I'm like, no, this is going to be great. So I was like, Matt, you go, girl. You go.
Yeah.
And it did. And it's super cool. And it was a huge hit for the client.
Yeah.
And they're using it, like, just as a still, like, to look at?
So it's like a little thing you put up to your eyes,
right.
you know, and you click through it, you know, slide through it.
Uh-huh.
And, and it's in 3D. It's a cartoon.
Oh, cool.
So it's
a little bit before your time, since you're
there. Well, and I mean, I know what they are.
Saw them at a museum.
What's the deliverable to the client, I guess, is my question?
The deliverable to the client was just the artwork.
Wow.
And they went and they got the slides. They even got the ViewMaster device. Uh-huh. They plastic, you know, injection molding, and it has their logo embedded in the plastic.
So cool.
So it looks like, you know, it's like Mattel or something.
Yeah.
I love it when a client will take a chance and then hit a home run.
Yeah. So anyway, that was so geeky and so cool. I'd love to share it with you guys, but you'll have to come to my office.
Okay, cool. Can't wait to look at that. Sean, how about you, man? You see anything cool lately?
Yeah, definitely. So recently they just came out with this new little scanner that you hook up to a projector. Forget the brand name. You didn't check out the link?
No.
No? Forget the brand name. But these two guys, one of them was touring with Skrillex. It basically is all around the fad of projection mapping, which I'm sure you guys have probably heard of.
Lightform.
Is that it? Lightform. Okay, so Randy has heard of this. And their video is pretty cool. The one I sent out last night to the group. Basically what they have is this tiny little box with a camera in it. And it can map whatever you put in front of it, and then it brings it into a software where you can mask and, you know, basically use like Bezier handles to create your, you know, here's the object I want to project on. And it has depth sensors and things, and some of the coolest applications, like, you know, they would take like a stormtrooper helmet and they'd project a cool pattern on it, which is cool. But then you can go like, you know, real world practicality. Imagine having a blank you know, whiteboard or a chalkboard. And then you're a restaurant, and you can now project your menu with interactive, you know, if it's hot outside, the menu changes to cold drinks. If it's cold outside, you advertise your warm drinks. Without having to redo it, rewrite it, reprint it, whatever, this is a projection-based thing. And yeah, I mean, it was the coolest thing. And the reason I bring it up, you know, for us is because I feel like it gives us a doorway into using practical effects in our filmmaking, right? Mm-hmm. So instead of having to do something in After Effects and figure out how to motion track this and make it look right, having one of these projectors on a shoot where you can map something out, mask it, design custom projections for whatever your atmosphere might be, could be a really cool way to capture some of those effects in camera. And have some interactivity as well. So as somebody who likes music and concerts and things like that, it's just a really cool little invention that can, it's compatible with HDMI out to any projector. Mm-hmm. So really, it's not doing the projecting, but it's the brain that powers that process. And then any projector that you have laying around the office could be hooked up to make some really cool stuff. So we'll put a link to that in the description down below. Really, really cool.
So still limited to the lumens of the and resolution of the projector of what kind of environment that
I think so. Yeah. So I mean, you know, if you have a weak projector with a low, you know, lumen output, you know, you may struggle. But it didn't look like they were using anything super special.
Right. Tough to do it outside unless it's dark.
Right. Dark. Think of that nature. Exactly. Or you have some, you know, really boss projector. But yeah, I mean, just, you know, even indoors and normal office lighting, this thing was working really well. And within close proximity, it was amazing how cool they could make just everyday objects look and how fast they were able to set this stuff up. You know, whereas certain live designers are taking, you know, months to map out a stage and use, you know, projection mapping software, this really puts those capabilities into the kind of common man's hands and opens up that additional realm of creativity, you know. And I think the price point is $1,500 or something like that, maybe. So
cool. I think we'll all go out and order one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually reminds me of this project I saw that's kind of photography-based, I suppose, more design-based, but there was this guy that did this project where he researched old, you know how they used to paint on the side of buildings back in the day for advertisements and stuff? He went around and he would take I guess photographs and then use different levels of light, like the light levels or whatever, to reveal all these faded old advertisements. Hmm. And then he would research like local businesses from back in that day to figure out what the business was and what some of the words that he couldn't quite make out were. And then he would recreate these this artwork, and then he would project it onto the building at night and show what it used to look like in a community.
Very cool.
It's really, really cool. Yeah, I'll put a link to that guy. I'll have to dig him up. I met him at Adobe Max a couple years ago.
Nice.
So, yeah, super cool stuff. Randy, have you seen any cool tech shit lately?
Just been so busy, I haven't just been able to just geek out on latest tech. Haven't been into it.
I've actually been trying to get away from it for a while.
Right? Yeah.
The real life of a photographer.
Yeah, sometimes it's nice to step out of that stuff for a little bit. Yeah.
And you kind of rejuvenate and then come back in a better place, I think.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Probably not the answer that you wanted.
No, the answer I wanted was meaning of life, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, cool tech shit. So, what about coffee,
Shout
Randy? What kind of coffee are you drinking today?
Well, today it's gone because I needed some caffeine bad because I flew the red eye back. So didn't get too much sleep, but it's a 4-shot Americano.
Not a
boy.
Ooh, 4-shot.
Nice. Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. No wonder you're still sitting up.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Exactly.
Yeah, how about you, Chris? What sort of coffee are you drinking today?
This wonderful blend of lemon ginger kombucha. You know, it's delicious, and there's no caffeine.
Yeah, Sean, I thought you were going to send Chris the memo on this is coffee. Filmmakers and photographers drinking coffee.
He kept using this excuse like he's been doing for a while. My email's broken.
His email's broken.
Gosh, this is the first I've heard of this.
Yeah. Sean, what can you tell me about coffee today, my man? What are you drinking first and foremost?
Well, first and foremost, let's see. I did a 12-ounce latte with an extra shot. So that's a three shots of espresso and a 12-ounce beverage. So, yeah, it was good. what kind of coffee maker do you guys have at home? What's your brew method? So, Chris.
I definitely grind the beans.
Okay.
Throw them in a drip system, just a single cup kind of drip system. And, you know, I don't drink as much coffee as I used to. This stuff's delicious. but when I do drink coffee, I want it to be as good as it possibly can be.
So you grind it fresh.
Grind it fresh.
Drip
system. Yep.
Cool.
Yep.
Brady, how about you? What's your coffee machine at home?
I have this fantastic little... correct me if I'm wrong how to pronounce it. I think it's Breville.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Right. A great Christmas present I got a year ago, and it's got the grinder built right into it.
Ooh,
and,
yeah. Convenient.
Water tank, and I'm not sure how many bars of pressure that it is. Probably not like the high-end pro one like yours, but not too bad espresso.
Even my high-end espresso machine doesn't actually tell me how many bars of pressure I have.
Why is that important?
Well, okay, so in order to extract espresso properly, it needs to be between a certain amount of pressure from the water being forced through your coffee grind. So that's why, and guys, I'm not as big of a coffee snob as everyone makes me out to be.
Bullshit.
There's a bunch of chemistry involved, and it's science, right? I mean, it's a little bit of alchemy in a way, right? You have to have, the exact same portion of espresso, and you have to work with how fine your grinds are, and then water temperature and brewing pressure all have to be dialed in so that you're getting a consistent, shot every single time. And so that's why, even like the humidity on a day could change how fine you have to grind your coffee. I bet if we asked the team here at Dark Heart, they probably do calibrate their grinders every day on the daily. Now, they probably have a much nicer espresso machine than I do, so they probably can tell how hot it is, how much pressure is built up in the machine, and they can make sure that those are consistent throughout the day, because that does make a difference, right? Mm-hmm. If it's too hot, you can burn your espresso, not hot enough.
I'm thinking having a climate-controlled air-conditioned environment makes it so they probably don't have to do that
much. Yeah, but I mean, even the humidity in the air from the weather, it can, and who knows how
interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces to it. So, so it's funny you mentioned the grinder on yours, because what I was going to say is, how often do you clean your grinder?
Not nearly enough. I've probably once a year.
Right. Should clean it once a week, ladies
and gentlemen.
Because
now that's a coffee
nerd. The oils on the coffee beans can
I've
go,
never cleaned mine.
Can go rancid.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, what about the espresso machine itself?
That's a nice bitter.
Well, the espresso machine itself, the basic way to clean it, there's two ways to clean it. One's called back flushing. For all you coffee people out there, back flushing is when you put a closed espresso basket on your portafilter, and then you pull a shot, and instead of it being allowed to pass through the basket, it gets basically caught in there because it's a closed basket, and the water is forced back through the machine into your drip tray. And so what that's designed to do is when you do that, it builds up pressure, and then the pressure is released, and it's supposed to take all the excess coffee grounds and oils and things like that with it. They also have detergents, things like Cafisa that you can use to help clean your machine out. Places like this, who serve a lot of coffee, would do that every day. Someone like me would do that maybe once a month, because the detergents can have some adverse effects on your machine too if you use them too much. So clean your machine every day, every time you use it, back flush once a week, clean your grinder once a week.
So I've always wanted to know this. How much difference will a shot of espresso taste between your machine and my machine?
At least 100. 100 difference.
Way different. You're totally missing out. No. I think for real, even a cheap espresso machine will make a great shot of espresso. I think the difference that I noticed when I went from my Cuisinart $250 espresso machine to my Rocket Milano espresso machine, which is basically like your entry-level prosumer espresso machine, was the ability for it to make multiple shots of espresso with without like losing pressure. So like with my Cuisinart, no knock on Cuisinart, they make a wonderful introductory machine. But I would pull, you know, one shot of espresso. Then on my next one, it had trouble forcing that through, so pressure wouldn't build up fast enough. Temperature was inconsistent. So things like that. So when you're just going to go make that one cup for yourself in the morning, that's going to come out pretty good. If you want to make five cups for your party, you're going to really find, oh my God, the second one and the third one are just getting worse and worse.
That makes sense. There's logic behind that one.
Yeah. So I think that's really it. It really, what it comes down to, fresh beans, the right grind and get
a clean grinder
and a clean machine.
And do you freeze your
beans
or put them in the refrigerator or cabinet or?
Well, yeah. So
you hear all these stories.
Yeah, I mean, an airtight container is probably what you want. If you have a container where you can actually pump the air out, that's the best way to do it. It's all about oxidation, right? So as soon as you grind those beans, which is why if you buy ground beans, you can pretty much always guarantee you're not going to get any of that, like, essence of the original bean, because it's either, you know, it's cooked out of that coffee or whatever, right? But, the freshness comes down to, like, what you do, Chris, grinding it fresh, because the beans haven't been exposed to oxygen, so it's, you know, all that flavor in the bean isn't being basically oxidized out, right? So that's really where the flavor, I think, comes in. And grind your beans fresh, clean machine, clean grinder.
And don't neglect your drip tray.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes me think we need to have a guest one of these days. A friend of mine a long time ago made a he's also a filmmaker, made a film about coffee and mountain biking.
Ooh.
So I think it would be a perfect.
Yeah, let's get him on here. Yeah. Randy, when will you get that done?
Let's see. We'll have to check into his schedule.
Yeah. His email's probably broken, too. Yeah. Let's talk about geeky tech shit. I feel like Sean needs to come up with sound effects for all of our segments. So geeky tech shit today, we're going to talk about live streaming. We're live on Facebook right now.
What's up, Facebook?
We have this fantastic little device called a Mevo live stream that's allowing us to live stream directly to Facebook right now.
Who makes it?
Mevo. They're owned by Livestream now.
Which is owned by?
Vimeo.
Yeah, interesting progression, right? I mean, you know, you see this company come out called Livestream, so they kind of own that space. They come out with their own piece of technology, their own camera, to enable people right out of the gate to be able to do 4K multicam, quote unquote. I put that in quotations because it's a fake multicam, right? But it works pretty good. And then a big, huge content platform like Vimeo comes in and buys right out of the gate. You know, they see what YouTube is doing, you know, and they say, we want a piece of that action. We want to be that platform that can support that too. And I think they're positioned to actually maybe even do it better than YouTube, right? I mean, Livestream's whole deal was to give you ultimate flexibility and capability with your content, from, you know, viewing carousels where you can, I mean, imagine you have an event with four different sessions going on. If you have to go to four different web pages, it doesn't make it that great of a user experience. But if you can browse through, just like you're channel surfing, to different live stream programs, that's pretty cool. And that's not something you can do on YouTube right now, but something that Livestream and Vimeo are enabling you to do.
Yeah, so cool. we've Sean and I have quite a bit of experience with live streaming, and you know, our very first live streaming piece of gear was a TriCaster Mini. So it's the kind of the entry level TriCaster from New Tech. Yeah, when I had first heard about them, I'm like, they're still in business?
Yeah.
Wow. From the video the
paradigm
toaster,
shift.
Yes, exactly. Who's seen
only
that video?
Only you would know
yes,
that.
Yes,
context
the paradigm
that.
Shift.
Yes.
We'll put a link to, maybe there's a video out there somewhere for that.
Kiki
Stockhammer.
Stockhammer.
Yeah.
I almost said it a different way. I'm glad you saved me.
But yeah, so we've got the TriCaster Mini, which is a pretty good piece of hardware. It's big and cumbersome and Windows and, you know, and then our next piece of live streaming gear was the, what did we get second? The Sling?
The Sling Studio. Well, technically, we had the Wirecast setup.
Oh, that's right. So we also had a Wirecast setup. So that's a software-based solution that runs on Macintosh. And we would use some boxes from Blackmagic to allow us to get an HDMI signal into our Macintoshes via Thunderbolt. And it works at least one out of every 78 times. So we have that system as well. It's a little cumbersome, and we're probably going to not use it anymore unless we're just simply simulcasting, passing a feed from one of our primary live stream systems into the Mac, use Wirecast to go out and syndicate to another channel. What else do we use?
Yeah, so... there's the Wirecast, the Sling Studio, and then I think the last solution we got was what we're using today, which is the Mevo. And I think what's interesting about these things is live streaming can be as big of a production as you want it to be. And now, because of the landscape of content, right? People have gone from just recording their YouTube videos to live streaming some of these things. And even people who aren't putting their content out live are using live stream systems to achieve multi-cam, control over their performances, right? So there's a local musician, David Weilman. He's got over 100,000 followers on YouTube, and he does guitar tutorials. Our kids went to the same daycare for a while. And one, hugely impressive that he has over 100,000 followers.
Because
10,000 followers is really hard. So 50,000 would be amazing. 100,000 would be really cool.
Especially nowadays.
With how congested and how much content there is out there. So, but one of the things that he does is he doesn't necessarily live stream, but he owns a Sling. And I actually found this morning that Sling Studio featured one of his videos on their webpage as somebody who uses their software. And because people kept asking him, like, how are you doing this multi? He's alone in a room. It's his studio where he films all his tutorials. And he switches the cameras live as he's doing this. So he might be talking, over here. Then he'll grab his guitar and be over here. And instead of having to record three cameras and then do all that in post and spend hours, to make this video, he's saving himself all this time and effort by doing it as he's doing the tutorial.
So when he reaches for something, he just hits the button?
He's just basically right. So if he knows he's going to switch, he'll drag over his other camera angle. And so during his, lessons, you might see him do this once or twice. But, it's a very small step that... Yeah. Has saved him a ton of time, right? So I think
you need to rig that to a foot switch.
Right? That would be even more natural.
Like a guitar foot pedal.
Bam! Nope, flanger. Shit. Cut camera.
I think that's what's so cool about it is like the concept of multi-cam. Even taking the stream out of it, multi-cam switching has become so mainstream and commonplace now that there's all these solutions coming to the market that are not a $20,000 solution. They don't require high-tech cameras. In a lot of cases, the cameras are built in, but they're the size of a...
But can you hook up...
Yes.
Yes.
High-end cameras,
yes.
If you want to.
And that's what's really nice, right? So with the Sling Studio that we use, and I think that we... So a long time ago, right, the New Tech TriCaster Mini was like our main system. We used it all the time. And the thing about the TriCaster that's really nice is it gives you really robust... capabilities, right? So if you want to build a complete 3D studio where the graphics in the digital environment respond to camera zoom and things like that, and really high control over playback and replay and things like that, the TriCaster is the way to go. But we found that a lot of the things we were doing didn't really warrant all those bells and whistles. And so when you take out running cables, having to hook up a dedicated monitor and keyboard and, all the stuff that came with that system, the Sling Studio really had a beat right out of the gate. It was way cheaper. Cost of entry was way lower. Much easier to use. Yeah. And the thing about, and to your point, Randy, right, we can hook up any of our cameras through the HDMI, and they're all wireless. They have these cool little wireless boxes called camera links.
Or SDI?
No, not SDI. But the thing that they've enabled people to do is say, cool, Chris, you got three really nice cameras. Those are going to be our main shots. But one of the speakers at the event is going to be backstage as the, you know, the panel people go on, and we want to get that backstage view. Do we have a camera for that? No. Do they have an iPhone in their pocket? Yes. So now what they've opened up is they said, anybody out there, you don't even need a camera. All you need is the phone in your pocket, and you can do multi-camera production. And I mean, speaking from experience, iPhones have pretty dang good cameras. And so that's what's really cool about it is that, you know, we've seen everything from the big elaborate setup to the small kind of put it in your pocket and go setup. More and more people are doing this kind of stuff now, and it's just because the technology is really catching up. Right?
I can relate to that because I was on a production at the X Games, and I think it was 2011 or 12, and we did a live stream for Jeep. And
cool.
It was brutal. Yeah. It was a nightmare on the side of a mountain.
Seven years ago?
Just the internet connection and the cameras and all the cabling and getting it to work. And then ESPN would come in and shut you down and take your internet connection away. And it was a nightmare.
Yeah, honestly, what we use for our internet connection, for anybody who's watching, we use a little MiFi device from Verizon now. That's what we use for our internet connection. Now, granted, that might not be too good on the side of the mountain.
That would have saved us from editing all night long and having to post the next day because ESPN stole our internet connection.
Yeah. Damn ESPN.
Yeah, we've done speed tests with those things in convention centers where you have 10,000 people that are also trying to use a 4G network on their phones.
Wow.
And we've found, I mean, And average price, right, going for an internet drop if you're working conventions and shows and things like that, between $3,000 and $6,000. And this is for your basic 3 megabit, maybe 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they drop this line
insane.
For us because it's dedicated and we can rely on it. And then we do a speed test and we're barely getting 4 megabits up. And we're like, this is kind of scary. And then all of a sudden we plug the MiFi in. And the thing's at like 22, you know, we're like, oh my gosh. And we're thinking, God, even if this was tapped out a little from where it is now, it's still going to be faster than the $6,000 internet drop.
That and with all that action of so many other people using the system, it's still working like that.
It's still working like
that.
Wow. Yeah, and so.
It's impressive.
Is it 4G then? Is that how it taps
into it? I think it's 4G LTE, right?
Yep, it's 4G LTE. This one's on Verizon.
Yep.
Now, what kind of camera can you use with this system?
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, because it's wireless.
Yeah, that box just.
But your camera has to have wireless capabilities, correct?
No. So that box just handles our internet connection. We would use that in conjunction with, like, right now this Mevo that's streaming for us is hooked up into that for the internet connection, or we would connect the Sling to that, or theoretically you could connect the.
Okay.
TriCaster to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the other thing, right? Is like. You know, internet's always going to be a challenge with live streaming, but if you have that backup solution, like, I think, you know, it still holds true that you'd want to get that dedicated line in if you can, you know, but I think now we're finding that if that becomes a challenge or that's not working, a 4G LTE hotspot is a really
so
good
So since
backup
we're being geeky
cases.
And techie, are they making anything that will... You can hook up both, and it will automatically sense signal and do an auto switch.
Ooh, I don't know about that, actually. That's an interesting one. That'd be cool.
Something to think
about.
Randy,
really cool.
You ought to make that. When are you going to have that ready?
end of second quarter.
End of second quarter. I like that.
2 years from now. Yeah.
I didn't say what year.
Cool, guys. Listen, let's wrap it up. As always, it's a pleasure to sit down with you guys, talk about our craft, and drink some coffee or kombucha. For those of you brave enough to actually listen to this whole podcast, please make sure you subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Share it with your friends and colleagues, and go out and make something. On the next episode, we're going to talk about listening more and talking less.
I'm sorry, what? I wasn't listening.
Filmmakers and photographers.